Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello one and all, and welcome to the latest episode of Behind the Glass. This week, Dylan, what's your surname?
Morris.
I did kind of know that, but it slipped my mind. We are joined by Dylan Morris from Joe Macari Performance Cars.
How's it going?
You're adjusting your mic?
It's got to be done. Is it falling?
No, we're right.
Do you need to tighten it a bit?
I think so.
Let's do it. Just lift it up and then... There you go, yeah. These are a bit busted, these mic stands. I bought them for like £3 off... There we go. Now we're set up. Now we're professional.
Back in the room.
So Dylan, welcome to Behind the Glass.
Thanks for having me, bro.
We're going to tell everyone in a second what Joe Macari Performance Cars are, because not everyone might know. But first off, let's do a bit of an introduction to you. So what do you do here at Joe Macari's?
I am the head of marketing. So my role is largely sort of running the Instagram. When cars come in, I sort of photograph them. I write the ads for them as well, and then I sort of manage them on Piston Heads, Auto Trader, whatever it might be. And then just like little odd jobs. So like I deal with the DVLA a lot.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, which
who
is
doesn't
awesome.
Love dealing with the DVLA?
I mean, literally, they're like thinking of setting an office up for me at the DVLA because I find them so much.
The freaking dream.
But yeah, I mean, it's bits of everything, man. I just like no 2 days are the same. I just.
But okay, so then to give a picture of what Joe Macari's is, I will try and summarize it quickly and then you can correct me. If you're unaware, it is possibly one of the greatest supercar, classic car, performance car showrooms you will ever go to. It's located in Southwest London. Joe himself, again, you can paint a bit of a picture of. A formidable character in the automotive scene, I'll say.
Yeah.
And through that, through his connections and through his life, you guys end up having some incredible stock in this place.
It's unbelievable.
I'm looking out the window now. We are currently set up in your sort of boardroom, and I can see two Lamborghini Muras. I can see a Ferrari F12 TDF. I can see an Enzo. I can see Koenigsegg. It's non-stop.
We've got everything, man. Like as you said, from TDFs right through to sort of, you know, the James Coburn 250 Cal Spider, we have everything.
And it's always changing. Luckily enough, I live very nearby. I literally am like 5 minutes around the corner, and every time I drive past, there's new stuff in.
Mm.
And what is your policy on letting people just come in and perv?
Dude, open door.
Really?
Like, we love having people come in. I mean, you know, it's a two-way street. Like we expect a certain level of decorum and respect.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, if this is the thing, you know, what I find, I'm you know, really lucky in working in this industry, is that I'm united with a sort of brotherhood and sisterhood of people that just share this burning passion for cars, much the same
Absolutely.
As I do. But everyone who works here shares the same passion. So if someone wants to come in and have a knock, like, sure, the door is locked, but that's because we don't just want the door flying open all the time.
Absolutely.
If you guys want to come around, knock on the door and come in and take photos, like, we actively encourage people to come down.
There is your shout out. There is your call to action, people. If you are in London, if you happen to be in Southwest London, look up Joe Macari, knock on the door, ask for Dylan. If he's not here,
yeah, honestly. I mean, like, we get people emailing us probably 4 or 5 times a week being like, oh, that is all right if I come in, because I know that some dealers are a bit funny, you know.
Of course.
They don't have that, like, I mean, not to call out specifics, but there are definitely places I know that they don't like when people come and take
Absolutely.
Photos. But for us, we're as much a museum as we are a car dealership, and people will often sort of be like, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm not coming here to buy anything, and we're like, dude, we don't care, man.
Yeah,
like, before I started working here, I live around the corner and I used to come around and just perv all the time.
Yeah,
like,
that's
cool
exactly
it.
It's just, you can't help it. If you're a car person, this honestly is Toys R Us.
Mm.
For like, it's just drool worthy every time I come past. We're going to come back to, as I say, cars that are in here right now and some stuff that you've seen and been lucky enough to get close up with. But I want to kind of jump on a point that you were just talking about, because I think we met before. Did we meet when you just started?
I literally just started. I just started. Because obviously, I mean, to give a sort of bit of a backstory, I think you and all the guys that you work with are sort of largely responsible for me ending up where I ended up. Because I was sort of...
Oh, dear then.
No.
You might be on behind the glass, but there's no...
I honestly, I don't even think I've told you this before. So basically...
I'm quietly passing in £50 under the table.
Exactly. I was sort of at uni doing like a music degree, and I was halfway through my sort of final year, and I'd got really into watching like you and Seb and, you know, like Paul and all that kind of stuff. And sort of to me, I'd always been hugely passionate about cars, but I'd never really entertained working in the automotive industry because I had no in. I didn't know anyone. I'm not an engineer. Like, I'm not a particularly talented photographer. And it was always sort of like to me this pipe dream that I never thought I'd attain. And I was watching, I think it was like when Paul went to the, what was it? I think it was like the RS Audi day, like last year or whatever it was. And sort of Tim was in the RS6 and I think Paul was in the RS3. And I sort of figured like, do you know what? Like, why am I like not trying to get involved? And like, the story goes basically, I mean, like, as I said, I live around the corner, and it was Valentine's Day. The evening leading
you're
into
Valentine's
Day. Like,
I know what I
want
to meet. I'll have the exhaust pipe.
and my girlfriend was over, and I was like, oh man, like, I haven't got anything. I haven't got a card. Like, I haven't got flowers. I haven't got anything. So I was like, I'm just going to pop out to grab some ice cream. And like, I ran to the Shell garage that's down there, because it's the only place around here that's open 24 hours. I was literally like, dude, give me something pink. Give me something pink now.
I've once bought a Christmas present from a petrol station, but you've outdone me.
Oh, no, I mean, she is now my ex-girlfriend. This may be part of the reason, but whatever. So I was sort of walking back to my house after I bought the stuff, and I stopped outside Joe's to just have a look through the window. And I was like, do you know what? There is no reason for me not to go in and at least make... have a crack.
Yeah, just say hi.
Yeah, exactly. Just introduce myself. And like, I walked through the door the next day with a CV, and I literally said to them guys, I've got time on my hands. I just finished an internship at an investment bank, which I hated.
Yawn.
Oh, dude, it was so
boring. No one's
going
to enjoy that.
I know. And I was sort of looking at maybe like, because I worked at Nando's for a long time, so I was thinking about maybe going there.
Yeah, what was your pick as an insider at Nando's?
Oh, dude, see, this is the secret, right? So we had like a limited budget for like what we could get for food. My thing was, I'd always thought that there was a mistake in them not doing some kind of shredded chicken.
Yes, like a shawarma.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I used to do was I'd buy the Portuguese roll. I'd get like a quarter chicken, usually a breast. Okay. And then I'd figured out how to make like peyronnaise. Wow. And so I'd basically get like all the bits and pieces, shred up the chicken, mix it with the like.
So were you a cook or were you a server?
Like, no, I was just like tills and floor and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But you were just carving up your own shred chicken. Man. That's insane.
Yeah. Because everyone else would get like a really sad little quarter chicken or whatever. Yeah. And there was me just with this like
kinging it
feast. Yeah, exactly.
What would you recommend that someone doesn't get from Nando's?
Do you know what? I've never understood the Prego steak roll.
Okay, yeah.
It's a chicken shop. Like, why? What's with the beef?
Why?
What's
come here for chicken. Beef? It's got freaking chicken on the side.
I know.
Eat some freaking chicken. I love that. My title of this podcast is now going to be From Nando's to Supercar Dealership.
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, just to bring it full circle, like, I was basically a bit of a loss. And I walked in, as I said, with a CV and literally said, like, can I speak to the manager? Had a quick chat with him. And because I'd done a music degree, I sort of had some like contacts in the music world. And I'd done a bit of management for... Players Records, so like drum and bass label, doing their social media stuff. So I did have like something to bring to the table. And you know, luckily your friend Wolfie, who had been doing my job before me, had just sort of handed in his notice, and they needed someone to fill the gap.
Sure.
I mean, if I'd come in 2 days earlier or 2 days later, it just wouldn't have happened. It was just right time, right place. I came in, I started doing the job, and you know, it was scary at first, man, because I was so out of my depth, and I just put my head down, worked as hard as I could, and it wasn't hard because, you know, for me, I was literally a kid in a sweet shop. You know, if any of your listeners could, you know, like, you literally go from, you know, lying in your bed, twiddling your thumbs, playing Xbox, to working at Joe McCarty, like, it was a dream.
It is absolutely a dream, because as we touched on before, this place really is a sweet shop. I mean, everywhere you look, there's cars that you could only dream of seeing, and you are lucky enough now to spend your days around them, sitting in them, moving them, and to be
quite jaded. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah,
because you know, when I first started working here, I'd see like a Mondial drive down the street. I'd be like, oh my god,
mate, Mondial sick. What are you talking about?
No, exactly. What you need is a brown Mondial, brown interior.
No, you know what I saw was a white Mondial with a red interior. I was like, oh no! I was like, literally, I sent the guy an email saying, how much do you want? Honestly. I was like, I need that car.
Guys, I bought a Ferrari.
But literally, I thought it'd be quite a cool series about buying the worst Ferrari ever made.
I know, dude, for sure. Like, you have cool. to tease it with just the badge first. So yeah, it was yeah. like, oh, dude, like, he's finally got a CS. Sick.
And I've got a Mondial T. But yeah, okay, so there's a huge thing there, I think, of... I see it a lot. A lot of people send messages on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You know, how do I get into the car world? How do I start? And I think a lot of people think of YouTube or Instagram as the first 2 points. I'll become a car photographer or I'll become a car YouTuber.
Yeah.
But there are a million other ways to get involved with the car world.
Because, I mean, the thing is, like, you guys as a sort of crew have...
A crew, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Watty
YouTuber gang. You guys have sort of got quite a really broad spectrum between you. Everything from sort of, like, Queen Bee doing the sort of moddy stuff through to... You know, you, James, Paul, all those guys doing like the really like bread and butter cool stuff that we all love to watch. And I think that it's quite hard for someone to break in now because not that the market's saturated, but it's just already such a high level of quality. I think that you'd almost need to be slightly more creative than just thinking I'll start a YouTube channel.
I say this so often. I think the automotive space is crying out for someone doing something different.
Yeah?
It's, yeah, because you know what? I slightly disagree. I think anyone can join the YouTube space whenever they like. I think it's a platform which encourages and promotes new, exciting content.
Oh, completely.
I think the one thing which... our space on YouTube does not want is another bloody supercar YouTuber. Do you know what I mean?
Like, someone, you know, if someone came in and did a really cool Japanese channel,
oh my god, like JDM or modified or classics or yeah. racing or something. And I know Archie's trying to push his channel a bit more back into racing, but he has inherently become a supercar YouTuber one way or another. But I do think our space is, as I said, just something different, just a bit more unique. Or here I am with my 1.4 liter 2002 Golf, like. A different form or automotive.
Actually, no, did you know, you're so right. Having heard you vocalise that, I think you're dead right. I think what's actually saturated is the supercar.
Yes, absolutely. Because there's only so many times you can probably go, exactly. I bought a new supercar, I wrapped it, I put an exhaust on it, I sold it. Like, you know, we're all sick of it. So
no, completely, man. I think you're dead right. I think, you know, listeners, someone get on there, do a JDM channel. That would be so cool.
There is actually a friend of mine who I'd like to give a small plug to now because he is doing an incredible job. Jamie FYD.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this guy... A lot of people know about him because he's got, actually I could check now, but he's got about 70k subs, I think.
Sure.
I hope I haven't undersold him or oversold him, but if I have oversold him, he needs 70k subs.
Yeah, if he doesn't have 70k, we need to get him 70k.
And he's been doing the modified scene now for a long time, and I genuinely think he's brilliant and he does it so, so well. And I'm just looking for a way for us to collaborate to try and send some more people his way, if I can do that, if I can help at all. But he's amazing. So yeah, guys, if you're into that, want to check it out, Jamie FYD. I think that's all you have to search on most platforms and it'll come up.
Do you know what I think that it could also be really cool? It's like one of the guys that used to work here was heavy into his drifting, like seriously into his drifting.
Yeah.
But not like sort of silly stuff. Like
he had an
R34 Skyline that he built up to like 900 horsepower.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Mad.
Stuff. Yeah, competition drift.
Yeah.
It is really cool. I find, yeah, there's definitely areas of that. But on top of social media, or at least in terms of running your own social media pages, there are opportunities inside it. Firstly, sales. Like, you know, I think people undervalue that opportunity to work in supercar dealerships because there are so many these days. Look at Tony Greville with car sales. You know, look at you guys. You don't have to go to HRO work at a mainline dealership. Blah, blah, blah. There's millions of other opportunities and smaller setups where you can be more hands-on. And obviously it's hard. You need to be a good salesman, but don't knock it. You know, you might as well go and have a look. As you've proven, marketing, social media marketing, PR side of things, a lot of these companies now need that sort of support.
Yeah.
But there's other things, you know, events, Goodwood, Festival of Speed. If you're into cars, go work at Goodwood.
Like, sell on Privé as well.
What an incredible thing, you know, just go and intern or whatever it might be. And I know it's easy to say, sitting here in our position.
Yeah.
But I have become a big ambassador or a big champion.
Yeah.
Of trying to work in something you're passionate about.
I honestly cannot emphasize how lucky I feel every day when I wake up because I've done jobs before that I've hated and there's been no passion. It's literally just been like, I need to pay for a new pair of trainers.
Yeah,
I need a job. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. and to wake up every day. Because I mean, for a long time, I wanted to be a musician.
Sure.
And I just didn't.
We both did.
Yeah, exactly. And
what was your dream band name? Did you have a band? Were you a solo artist?
Well, I was actually. Well, I mean, like again, I don't want to oversell myself. But, I mean, like me and a friend actually. Yeah. Oh, dude. I headlined Glastonbury.
I was on top of the pops.
No, but I mean, like, so me and a friend met at uni through the sort of like DJ society.
DJ society. No, that's me. Worse than the chess club.
But so basically, what you had to do is you had to submit like a 30-minute mix, and the winners basically got the beginning and end slot at a student night at Ministry of Sound. And so me and a friend sort of won it together, and then we sort of like, he turned out to be a dude, and me and him were like, well, why don't we just sort of team up and just do like a
become a rock DJ
and do like cut to like, we played Ministry of Sound, we played The Nest, we had bookings at Fabric, we had all kinds of stuff. But I mean, the thing was, we then needed to back that up with like production, I mean, for a long time I was like, I just figured after about 5 years of making music and not having made a single song, that I was like, this is actually pretty good. I was like, do you know what, it's just time to give up the dream.
Yeah.
You have to have a really honest conversation with yourself about if you're actually talented enough to do it. Yeah. Exactly.
I realised at about 15 that I was going nowhere. So I went behind and across the table and started working in the industry, and that went horribly wrong too.
But I mean, to sort of be able to, as I said, like wake up and do something that I love every day is worth its weight in gold.
It's incredibly hard to realise that ambition. You know, as I say, we're very lucky because we can sit here and we are fortunate enough to both, you know, I say wake up and do stuff that we love, and that is not easy. But I think the one thing is that I get frustrated about is people saying, oh, I there's no way I can work in the car world. Like, I don't know how I can. Because even if you've got a 9-to-5 job working in Nando's, as I say, go and work at Festival Speed for the weekend. Like, there's plenty of jobs that are like, you know, you can just put your head, you know, your hand up for and go and intern or get work experience and do and be part of that space. And
but I think one of the sort of things that I think is most important is you just your ability to talk to people. I mean, fundamentally, that's how I got my job. Is I walked in, I had a discussion with someone, and they were like, "Yeah, we'll give them a chance." It wasn't like, "Oh, I'll email my CV," and it's like, you know what? You need to go and put a face to a name.
Yeah,
you need to go and put across how passionate you are about this, because that is what will sell you and what will get you through the door.
And if you're struggling or you don't think that's possible, then use some bit of escapism and watch Seen Through Glass.
Exactly.
Via youtube.com/Seen Through Glass. Okay, so away from us being all preachy and telling listeners to go out there and follow their dreams.
I mean, dude, what the hell do we know?
I know, we're such douchebags. Both sitting here in this like amazing showroom. Like, oh, you know, if you want to work in cars, just go do it. Literally, I was like, shut up, you a-hole. Okay, so let's bring it back to cars, because Behind the Glass is predominantly supposed to be a cars podcast. As I say, every time I come here, the cars change. But right now, you've got some pretty special stuff. Are there any moments or any cars that really stand out in your memory in the time that you've been working here that you're like, I can't believe this is here, I can't believe, or maybe you're the first time you've gotten an Enzo or anything like that?
So when I first started working here, we had two cars in that I'd never really had a good look up close, because I remember before I started working here, like the thought of seeing like a Bugatti Veyron, I was like, oh my god, and I'd catch a glimpse of one and I'd be like, oh my god, it's so much smaller than I thought. When I started working here, we had that crazy carbon fiber Enzo, and we had a Rosso Corsa LAF, and I'd never had a good look at a LAF, and I'd never had a good look at an Enzo.
Okay.
And I remember it was just like, it was almost like, I didn't even, it was like being in a dream. Like, it really was. And I remember, like, I think on my first day, because I was sort of still getting to know everyone that worked here, and I said to Roy, one of the guys that helps us out around the showroom, I was like, well, like, can I get into the Enzo? And he was like, dude, of course. Like, you work here. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell? Like, that's mad. And so I got on the Enzo, and it was like, it was such a weird thing of meeting your hero and just being so impressed by them. And the first time that, you know, I mean, they put an unbelievable amount of trust in me. You know, I'm 22. I don't have a huge amount of driving experience, but, you know, I'm moving cars around in the showroom with sort of like 2 inches of clearance either side. And like the first time I moved a LAF around, that was seriously special. That is something that will stick with me forever, because it was like, I am so lucky that someone has actually said to me, like, yeah, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And since then, I've probably, you know, because...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm too young to be insured. I don't really get to drive the stuff on the road too often if it's a Ferrari anyway. Sure. Like Porsches and Corvettes and stuff, I get to, but... You know, like
the really high end stuff.
The really high end stuff.
Do you need me to fill this up? No, exactly. We do not.
But dude, the number of times someone's been like, "Oh, like, can you take that over to service?" And I'm like, "No, I can't. Thanks for reminding me."
Just to clear that up, the Joe McCarry's service department is literally across the road. I mean,
yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah.
It's physically across the road, but to move a car from the showroom or the showroom car park to the service centre, you have to drive on public roads, which means tenants are allowed.
It's so annoying. And then everyone comes in and they're like, "So have you driven everything in here?" And I'm like, "Well, I mean, like, it's been on and I've never left first gear, but I guess so." What's the handling like? At low speeds, it's fantastic.
Really great. It's really great at like 0 to 2 miles an hour. Just also to clear that up, because amazingly, something that's happened with this podcast, which I wasn't expecting to happen, the wonderful world of Apple and iTunes is bringing an audience that have no idea who I am or what I do or what cars are.
Of course, you're on iTunes now, aren't you?
Which is amazing. So a LAF is the Ferrari LaFerrari, the £1 million or €1 million
dude,
V12 dude.
Hypercar. 2.5 to 2.7 million pounds.
Nah, but when it was new. Because let's not get into car prices for people who don't understand the car market. That's just going to blow everyone's head off. But as of new, it was the £1 million Ferrari, the Ferrari. Unbelievable thing. And the Ferrari Enzo was its predecessor. But I think for you and I probably, I mean, I know for me myself, that was my poster hypercar.
Dude, no question.
And honestly, today, I would still be tempted to pick an Enzo over a LAF. Just because of the importance for me. Like, that was...
completely.
Like, I was... When that car got launched, it was... Oh my God, this whole...
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I was watching on Top Gear when I was, like, discovering cars.
Oh my God, absolutely. And the Michael Schumacher vibe. I was in
Schumacher obsessive
and the fact that he was involved with that whole process of just like... so, yeah, the Enzo has a huge
Did you ever see the Schumacher F1 car that we had?
Yeah, that was nice with the gold wheels.
Yeah.
Inspired by my Alfa Romeo 4C. Not. But the car that you were talking about a second ago is a Ferrari Enzo that had a very special exposed carbon fiber body. So that was a set, but that wasn't a Ferrari.
No, so essentially what happened is so Ferrari don't paint the really high-end stuff. They get sent to a sort of another paint
specialist
house.
Place.
Yeah, exactly. And what the guy did was he ordered the car, I think it was German delivered, in Rosso Corsa, which is obviously classic Ferrari red. And he then sent it back to Zanazzi, which is what the house is called, the double painting. And they rebodied it in carbon fiber. But this was at a stage before Pagani, before Koenigsegg, before carbon fiber was the artistry that it is today.
Okay.
And it was one of the sort of early cars. And they then rebodied the entire thing. Because they are carbon fiber itself.
The course.
But if you stripped all the paint off, none of the weave would align and there were sort of imperfections and stuff. So he sent the car back. But the weird thing was that it was photographed after that was done in sort of 2005 or whatever it was.
Sure.
And there was sort of this rumor going around that there was this exposed carbon fiber car. And it just disappeared. It wasn't seen in public for like years and years and years and years. And then it just popped up in our showroom. Yeah, and everyone was like, "Oh my God." And so when we took that thing to Gumball, man. And
but that does summarize what this place is like. Because, as I say, you can think of any supercar dealership in your mind. Joe McCarthy's is a very different experience because of the unique and rare cars you get and the variety of cars. And I don't know if you're in a position or want to give a bit of an overview of Joe and his position and how he ended up sort of running a place like this.
Joe's amazing. Like he is one of the most capable and decisive people I think I've ever met. He's personable and efficient. He's an awesome person to work with or work for and to sort of learn from.
Sure.
And so the story goes that he's been a car nut from day one, like from day one. And he got involved in a really terrible accident when I think he was sort of in his mid-20s or so. And he sort of had third-degree burns over like a significant portion of his body. His hands were ruined, you know, his face was really badly burned.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and he was told he'd never drive again.
Wow.
And he had sort of been an aspiring racing driver. And, you know, he went to the hospital and the doctor sort of said to him, well, you're never going to drive again. And he was like, right, I want another doctor. kind of thing.
And good man.
Yeah, you know, sort of a year and a half later, he emerged from the hospital and was driving. But I think he was quite... I don't know what the word is. He was nervous isn't right, but he was sort of wary of getting back into a race car because, you know, obviously it would have been hideously traumatic. And he then sort of started to deal cars and stuff. And he sort of built a name for himself. And essentially what happened was he became... He was a licensed independent Ferrari and Maserati service specialist.
Okay.
And one of the sort of very few that there are in the UK. And he then built alongside that the car sales side of the business.
Okay.
Which has now sort of flourished. I mean, we used to be on a sort of another premises on the Wandsworth One Way system.
Sure, absolutely.
I think they fit six cars into
there. Yeah.
And we're now in the showroom where we have between 50 and 60 cars. Wow. But, you know, he sort of built that up and. Honestly, it's just amazing seeing how he works. There is no one he can't talk to, you know.
And it must be a connections business, you know. When you're talking about these kind of cars, you know, as I say, peering over again. And guys, I will be uploading a ton of photos from the Joe Macari showroom today onto Facebook. So facebook.com/seenthroughglass. You can check out some of the photos of what's in stock today. I can see again F50 lurking around. Two F50s, cool, casual. I'm trying to peer over again. We've got a roof. I don't know what year that is. 9/11 roof down there, black one. 488. I mean, it's just so much going on. Mm. And to be able to get those cars in here, whether they're sale or return or bought or sold or whatever, you can only do by knowing the right people and being trusted. Being trusted that someone says, oh, I want to sell my car through you guys. So yeah, it's an incredible thing to see.
The things are I think, and again, I'm not involved in the sales side, so I actually don't really have any skin in the game. But I think that the sort of background that we've built for ourselves, the sort of reputation that we've built for ourselves, is one of wanting people to come back to us. And so, if you want to sell a car through us, we're not going to do you wrong because we'd love you to sell whatever car you have next to us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And similarly, if you're buying a car from us, we want to give you as fair a price as we can because we want you to return to us. It's
absolutely,
not a case
of
us wringing someone's neck and trying to get as much as we can then because, you know, sort of, and again, I can't speak for everyone, but my understanding is that we sort of play the long game and we look to the future and we try and build relationships, and that is how Joe's got to where he is.
And Joe and the company now do quite a bit of sponsorship in sort of through motorsport.
Just to sort of cap Joe's story off, he then went from, you know, that terrible accident and building up the sort of service center and sales side of stuff, and then went on to race at Le Mans and is now racing relatively regularly. I mean, last year he won the Kinrara Trophy at Goodwood Revival, which, if people don't know, is it's this race. I mean, it is stupid. I mean, you've got 250 GTOs,
yeah,
which are worth £50 million.
Imagine the best, most expensive cars in the world being thrashed in one of the most competitive races you've ever seen. So yeah, as you say, 250 GTOs, sideways, going through corners, bashing
overtaking
into each other.
Overtaking each other through
chicanes.
Yeah,
it's one of the most mental things you could ever imagine.
D-type sort of, like getting written off. Like,
yeah.
It's bonkers. And he went on to sort of win that with Tom Christensen, who was arguably one of the greatest Le Mans drivers of all time. I think he won like nine times.
Yeah, nine times. Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I think the one thing which I kind of wanted to talk about from a selfish point of view, being here, is I've now kickstarted my series, my hunt for my first classic car, and it's sort of an ongoing fluid thing, and I'm not in a particular rush. My big part is that I want to really research as much as I can, from JDM classics to old British classics to Italians to everything and all different decades. Coming in here today, it's a very nice Delta Integrale.
Well, dude, I sent you that picture the other day. I'm not joking. You need to get one of those.
They're pretty badass.
So that's the first car that I actually got a proper drive in when I worked.
Really?
So I had to drive it from here in Wandsworth to Regent Street for the Gumball 3000 thing.
Oh, nice.
I remember it was left-hand drive and I'd never really driven it before. And I hadn't really driven anything that was like strongly turbocharged.
Okay.
And I remember I was sort of going sort of under the underparts and I just sort of put my foot down a bit and it just...
This dumps turbo.
Me.
At some point it's a
But it's kind of F40-ish where it's quick and then it's quick.
But it does also sound like my bath.
Dude, like it is just the genesis of all hot hatches. It is the big daddy.
It's very cool. I don't think it's the route I want to go though. Because
the thing is, it's not classic enough.
It's a hatchback.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rally car essentially, isn't it? But brilliant. But from your, let's call it expertise. I'm gonna flatter you now, Dylan. Your expertise. We talked about various different cars before. Are there things that you see coming and going or around, let's say, the low end of the market? Because we've got stuff in here below us now that's millions and millions of pounds. But like the Integrale, which are kind of like up and comers almost. Yeah. You know, 30, 40, 50 grand things that are coming in, which you reckon are great shouts or things that have surprised you?
God, that's a tough one, man. I don't think you could ever go wrong with an original Fiat 500.
But yeah,
the original Abarth.
Cinquecento.
Dude, they're so cool.
So cool.
We had a guy come in.
I hardly fit in them, though. That's the only problem.
Oh, no, things. You're a bloody giant.
I'm 6 foot two. So but my
I
mean, like, head
you know,
is
I don't think you could go wrong with. The thing is, like, I like BMWs, but they're not my favourite. So sure. I don't know all the sort of like. The,
no,
sort of,
no, like, but like an old E9 kind of or stuff. Something like that.
But like sort of like an early 90s M3.
Mm.
Or,
yeah.
Or I tell you what the other big shout could be, and I don't know if this is really up your street. The 850 CSI. Are you familiar 850? With that?
Oh, yeah.
So that's the one that they nicked the engine out of for the F1, for the McLaren F1.
Oh, wow, okay.
And that is at the upper end of that.
It's a big car, isn't it?
It's a big car. And I don't know if it's classic enough, but in terms of cars that I think are pretty undervalued at the moment, that's the top of the food chain.
Because that was what I was tempted. Before I went down to Hexagon, who I don't know if they're a rival, so let's not talk about them, to start this off, in my head, I was like, that's what I want to go for. Big engine, German. Because I thought I could like strip it out.
Dude, the thing sounds like an F1.
Sounds incredible, blah, blah, blah. But they are big boats. That's the problem. Yeah. And so I'd be interested with the BMW. Maybe it's more archetypal BMW handling, cool driver's car. But you've got to think
I think Petrolicious did a really good video on an A50 CSI recently. Okay. And that's sort of where found out about it. And dude, it was so cool.
I love a Petrolicious.
I'm trying to think what else would sort of be cool.
What about like an old Alfa Junior? Because those I see like GTVs or GTAs or what's the Alphaholics car they've just done?
The sort of like 1500 or whatever it is. Again, I'm not...
Any old Alpha, I'm a bit nervous about rust buckets, but that's basically the problem, which not the problem, because it's a great problem to have, is you either spend, because I think my budget's around 30 grand.
Mm.
So either I go and find a real crapper for like 15 or 20 and then kind of work on it. Like that's an old 70s car.
Yeah.
Crapper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or I plow all 30 into something a bit newer that might be an up and comer, like an 850, like a Merc 560 SEC, so that's what I need. That's why I need to just drive lots of stuff, basically. But I'm obsessed with this idea, and you must tell me if I'm wrong. But being around older cars, especially the really special stuff, has opened my eyes up to a whole world that I never appreciated.
Dude, when I came into the showroom, I didn't care about anything
pre-2004.
Completely, I just didn't care. I mean, I didn't know what half the stuff was called. I didn't know my 365 GT C4 from a GT B4 from a GT S4. Like, and being around them, you do really appreciate what they're like. I mean, for instance, the other day, we're sending the Coburn 250 Cal Spider to Concours, and we needed some photos for it.
Sure.
And me being the expert photographer that I am, I was sort of like, yeah, cool
up our pro photographer.
Yeah, exactly. And so we sort of drove it from here to a park nearby. I mean, dude, you just don't get cooler than that.
It's so
one thing
cool.
Cruising around in a 488 or something where everyone looks at you and they're like, oh, that's a cool car. If you have a car like that, not only do you have a cool car, but you've got really good taste.
It's a totally different experience. Mm. And it's not really all about speed.
No, like, it's much more visceral than
it's
that.
It's so much more visceral. You're so engaged. It's so raw. And it's so enjoyable. It's pure driving enjoyment.
Because what modern cars allow you to do is just focus on the driving itself and sort of like achieving the highest speed that you can. But when you're in a car like that, you need to, if you hear a noise, you need to understand what that noise is.
Yeah.
And if something's not right with the suspension, you need to go like, oh cool, I need to adjust the camber to this and that. And
but
it's a much more engaging.
It's taking it all in.
Yeah, it feels much more like the car is an extension of you. And I know that's such a cliche, but I really mean that in the truest sense.
And the problem which I have is I was sold on the idea by a totally unreachable dream, which happened in LA at the end of last. But by the way, just to let you guys know, there's massive TV screens around where we're sat right now. And just down the road, a bus today has driven, just plowed into a building.
What?
Yeah, where? This morning at 7 a.m. It's just popped up on the news. 7 a.m. this morning. I don't know what happened, but this bus has ploughed into a building. It's really weird. I drove past it on the way here.
Where is it?
Just the outside of Clapham Junction.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, weird, right? Anyway, so I got totally distracted there because it popped up on the news.
Yeah. News, bringing you the latest. Now handing over to Stan Lane, our news reporter.
Yeah, coming back to my dream, last year in LA, I've talked about this a few times, I was cruising around in a Cadillac CTS-V, which was a beast of an American
car. Dude, those
things
are heavy,
it's like
man.
An M5, or proper Audi RS7, proper beast, on a canyon road, which is not necessarily where it was made to be, but it was good. And suddenly, out of nowhere, a 250 short wheelbase Ferrari comes.
You saw one in the wild?
Mate.
What?
Flying around a corner
blast
past me. Like flying. So I'm like, what the hell? Literally like pull like the quickest
handbrake.
3-point turn of my life. Chase after it. I'm like track mode and everything in this Cadillac.
Yeah.
I could not keep up. This guy, the car's like four-wheel drifting around corners. It's like wheel spinning away from junctions. I've never seen a classic car driven so hard in my life, let alone a 250 short wheelbase. And I'm chasing this thing, hyperventilating, like managing my like bulging boner, like just falling in love by every second whilst trying not to kill myself in a Cadillac to keep up. The guy finally pulls over, leans out. He must have been 30, 35, the coolest looking guy. Looked like he just stepped out of The Great Gatsby, like opens the door, looks under the car as if he's like checking whether like something's leaking or knocking or something, has a quick look, decides that there's nothing wrong, closes the door, looks back at me and just gives me like a thumbs up or like a peace sign or something blasts off. And I was like, oh my God, I have fallen in love with
what
this entire situation. Like, I was literally there. I think my girlfriend was like, are we over? Like, are you moving in with him? I was like, I think I am. And that was the moment when I went, this is a different form of cars. Ultimately, this is a new passion and something that I haven't experienced yet. And since then, I've just been slowly getting more and more obsessed by the idea. And as I say, it's not hard to fall in love with a, 10, 15 million pound Ferrari 250 short wheelbase?
No.
So that's the thing. So I'm not looking to buy that. But if I can capture a 1% of that, I would be happy. And it would hopefully set me on my way to engaging with that kind of...
Well, I think, dude, like at this stage, I think you're definitely better off going down the sort of German route. Because I think you'll find it much more easy to maintain and actually have a car that you can drive.
And probably tinker with as well. Because
there's
parts.
Man,
there's like
parts.
You get parts. That's the thing. If I'm buying a 70s Alpha...
I mean,
that sounds
dude,
like a
headache. It's gonna be expensive.
Yeah, that's the thing to consider. Anyway, we have rambled on for quite some time now, which is always good. I'm more than happy to ramble. I appreciate you massively coming on to be the guest this week.
Yeah,
it's been awesome. If people want to follow Joe Macari, what should they do?
At Joe Macari on everything.
Amazing. If they want to follow you, have you got personal pages?
Dylan P. Morris is my Insta. It's not particularly active at the moment. But
sure. Hey, look, get those followers.
That's
up.
Me, bro.
You can get more active. But yeah, it's been awesome. As I say, I implore you guys, if you are in this part of town, to swing by just to say hi to Dylan, but also to check out what they have in stock. I've made a few videos here. If you go onto the YouTube channel and just type in Joe Macari's in the search term, or just search Joe Macari Seen Through Glass, you can see a few different videos. And as I say, I will be posting some pictures up onto Facebook from today's visit. I think that will wrap things up right there.
Man, that's
make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast, iTunes and SoundCloud. I am looking into other podcast friendly platforms. Apparently there are some out there. And we will leave it there. Thanks again, mate.
Nice one, dude. Sweet.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.